Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thanks for hanging around with us. Wherever you are, however you're listening, whenever you're listening, it's good to have you here. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Richard DeKayser is our guest. He's our good friend and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's chief economist with National City Bank and our good friend. Richard, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Jim.
It's good to have you back. Okay, Richard, we're going to talk politics in just a minute. But before we do, I want you to give us your usual outstanding tour of where the economy is. Give us a little bit of a rundown on how things are going.
All right, I'll go back about a year. Starting in the middle of 2003, the economy really took off. We posted 5% GDP growth through the first quarter of this year. As all the uncertainties and anxieties related to the war in Iraq faded away, the economy just took off. Inventory rebuilding took off. Hiring began in earnest, and business investment took off. Now, since that time, we've entered what the Fed and others have called a soft patch. That is, we've throttled back from around 5% GDP growth to about 3.5% over the past two quarters. And it's very clear in my mind that the big culprit there is rising energy prices,
right,
which are acting like a tax on both businesses and consumers, especially consumers. Though my view here remains upbeat because I don't think $50 plus barrel oil prices are realistic. I think they're going to come down for some very important reasons, but I think that we should see this 3.5% growth we've been recently experiencing give way to stronger results as we go into 2005. So I have a pretty upbeat assessment for the near term.
Well, and Richard, you know about all my economist credentials, but in the beginning of the year, I predicted that by the end of the year, we would see 5% growth for the year and 5% unemployment. So I was kind of in the euphoria that of where you began about a year ago when I wrote my predictions. What I didn't see, and this is no great comfort to me, a lot of other smarter people didn't see, was the rising crude prices.
Well, that's right. You know, and it's really been two big factors. On the one hand, we've got some economic fundamentals at play. Because no one, and I mean no one, saw growth at the strength that it's been post-Iraq, that is starting in the middle of 2003, demand for crude has surged. It has far exceeded everyone's expectations. Supply has not been able to keep up, and as a result, we just have a scarcity, which is going to be fixed in time. But the other piece is really a tremendous level of speculative activity.
Yeah.
We've got investors in the middle part of this year showing record levels of positions in futures and options markets, meaning simply that they see everything that's going on around the world and predict that it's going to continue. Now, for both these reasons, though, as I said earlier, I'm optimistic. The fundamentals work out. In time, $50 plus oil brings new product to market, and the speculators eventually have to bow to fundamentals, which all seem to be pointing to a decline in prices as we go into 2003. So that the tax-like effects that have weighed on us thus far should translate into tax cut-like experiences as we go into 2005.
We understand how supply and demand works in raising prices. We were talking about that the first half of the year, that the growth in India and China and countries like that that are emerging so strongly that the demand for crude has cut into the supply, and we understand that dynamic. But what I'm not sure I understand is how speculators can cause prices to go up.
Well, what we've had is people who are buying options and futures for purposes other than actually taking possession of the product. I'm talking about hedge funds and the like. They're simply bidding up prices by buying contracts that say, I'll give you, say, $40 a barrel of oil for product 6 months hence. And if someone tops that and says, no, I'll give you $41,
right,
it just becomes a frenzy that builds
on
itself.
So it's a kind of a mania, isn't it?
It really is. Now, the problem is that because these folks actually don't take product, unlike
right.
oil companies, which are actually hedging reality, they're never going to buy that oil. So if at some future time they exit these positions, as they will do over time, the whole process unwinds. And, of course, it's almost impossible to say with any precision when that process unwinds, but you can predict with some reliability that it will unwind at some point. So,
well, I want to point out here as we go to a break, Richard, that you were the first person on this show to identify the speculators. You talked to us about this probably 6 months ago when you were on the show at a FedWatch in a FedWatch program. I was talking about supply and demand, and that's when you said, yes, you're right, Jim, but they're also now the speculators are what is holding up the prices right now. And so you were pretty early in your prediction back then. Stand by. We're going to be right back with Richard DeKayser, chief economist with National City Bank, right after these messages. It's 20 till.
Watching the tide roll away.
We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. The small business advocate, Richard DeKayser, is our guest, chief economist with National City Bank, and our good friend and longtime member of our Brain Trust. Richard, give us your website, please.
Very simple, www.nationalcity.com. That'll get you the corporate website, and if you append /economics on the end, you'll get to my economics website, and you're all welcome at either or.
Can we get your financial market outlook there as well?
Absolutely. Okay. I put out a monthly publication of Financial Market Outlook, and you can see it online, or you can register to get hard copy delivery.
It's outstanding, folks, so I encourage you to check that out when you get a chance. Talk to us about the holiday season. Richard, what are you seeing coming up in the next 2.5 months?
Well, I'm generally upbeat, but I have to put forward one caveat, Jim. You know, we've been talking about oil prices, and they have been a big tax, as I mentioned, on the economy, especially consumers, through the middle of this year. And that is, unfortunately, going to cast a cloud over the holiday season. And it could, frankly, go either way. If we start to get oil prices coming down, those tax cut-like effects will kick in, and I think we'll have a fabulous sales season. Conversely, if we remain stubbornly fixed above 50%, it could be the opposite. So I hate to do this, but give you the economists on the one hand, on the other. I will tell you, I believe that the most likely outcome is that we'll see the recent declines in oil prices over the past week or so get momentum and decline, but it's just one of those predictions that are too risky to bet the farm on. But for the whole, I think we're going to likely see a good holiday season. And regardless of whether this turn in oil prices happens in November or December or January, I do think it will turn. That I'm much more confident of. And you know, if we take a larger view and we look forward to 2005, as I mentioned a moment ago, that's where my optimism resides.
What do you think crude prices will be six months hence?
I think they'll be in the low 40s or high 30 range. And that's really what makes sense. If you look at what should determine the price of oil over time, the marginal cost of production, that is what the least efficient producer is, it's costing them to get the product to market at that time, that's in the mid-30s. So we should be heading there. And as I said, we've had a lot of bad luck. We've had problems on the supply side, including hurricanes in your neck of the woods. And we've also had this very, very unexpected growth. And let me put this demand situation in perspective. 18 months ago, the Energy Information Administration was predicting that global demand for oil would be rise 1% in 2003 and 1% in 2004. The actual numbers are 2.2% in 2003, and we're looking at over 3% in 2004. So it's been this unexpected global economic recovery accompanied by rising demand for crude. That's not going to last either. According to the International Monetary Fund, 2004 is going to be the strongest year for the global economy in 30 years. So demand will throttle back, supply will pick up, and that's where we see the improvement in prices.
All right. Let's talk about what the Fed's going to be doing this week. They're meeting tomorrow, and they're going to be considering all these things that you've been talking about. What do you think they're going to do?
I think it's a safe bet here. They're going to raise interest rates a quarter point. That is the overnight rate that banks charge each other for short-term lending. We'll go from 1.75% up to 2%. We were at 1% as recently as this June, mm-hmm. and I think we're heading in the direction of 4%. But let me just throw a few numbers your way to put this in perspective. So far this year, inflation, even if you take out oil prices and the like, has been running between around 2.25%, let's say. GDP growth has been running almost 4%. Those are both normal numbers. Even jobs have been running at about an average this year, almost 200,000 per month. So all the economic numbers we're looking at in terms of inflation, growth, the labor market, really depict an economy that is operating at normal rates. Meanwhile, the federal funds interest rate, which I expect to move up to 2%, is still far below normal. It's typically 1 or 2 or 3 points over the inflation rate. Today, it's under the inflation rate. So it's really this process of renormalization, if you will, that has that the Fed is presently embarked upon. And I think that moving us up to 2% in the next week is a sure bet.
Mm-hmm. What about, do you think that there's a housing bubble?
I think there is a risk of housing bubbles in some places. The simple answer to the question, is there a housing bubble in America, is no. But there are some property markets, and I'll tell you, we've done some research on this subject, looking at metro areas on a detailed level, and my conclusion is that about 20% of the home residential property value in this country is at serious risk of being a bubble, and most of this is located in California. But the other 80% is within normal ranges. So we've got about a fifth of the U.S. housing market, which is perched on what very likely could be a housing bubble. But even if we were to experience an imminent correction in that 20%, that would not mean that home prices universally are going to correct. In other words, as long as we get 80% moving forward, the economy as a whole should be able to absorb a correction in the other 20%.
What about the situation with Fannie Mae?
Well, this is a tougher call because it's fallen into the political realm.
Yeah.
They've been critiqued for managing their earnings. That's a no-no, not just for a government enterprise, but for any public
company.
They've been
cooking the books a little bit too, haven't they?
Well, I don't know. That's certainly the allegation. The director of the Office of Federal OFIO. One of those Washington acronyms has made that assertion, but the results are not yet clear.
I want to ask you when we come back if something were to happen. Fannie Mae couldn't sustain itself. What would happen? Would the government step in like they did with the SNLs or not? Tintel, stay with us. We'll be right back with Richard DeKayser after these messages. And you ain't had enough to eat. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Richard DeKayser is our guest. He's the chief economist and executive vice president for National City Bank. And their website is nationalcity.com. And you can go there if you tag economist. Is that right, economist on the end?
Well, if you put right, / economics.
Economics, okay. Then you can get to Richard's part of their site, which is where you can find the Financial Market Outlook, his monthly publication that I encourage you to check out. I think you'll find some important things there. Richard, another quick minute on Fannie Mae. A lot of small business owners are probably not tracking this, and I don't blame them for that, but this is a potential hiccup in the economy, couldn't it? If they fail.
Well, that's right. I don't think anyone's terribly concerned about an imminent failure or serious credit problem at Fannie Mae. But
your bank is a big mortgage lender. I'm sure you're upstreaming those mortgages to Fannie Mae, aren't you? Many of them?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The secondary market where mortgages are repackaged and sold is enormous in this country.
Yeah.
It's, you know, a couple of years ago it was on the verge of eclipsing the U.S. government, the U.S. Treasury loan market. So it's huge. The problem is that there is, even though not explicitly, implicitly, a government backing. So we're in a situation where Fannie Mae can take certain risks that will be essentially underwritten by the federal government, and that's not a healthy situation, which has really gotten on the docket legislatively, so to speak, in the past year. It's by no means clear how this is going to play out, because the Fannie Mae still, or at least in the last legislature, had enough supporters to at least prevent things from moving forward. But what you alluded to a moment ago was that there have been allegations of improprieties, very serious allegations of very serious improprieties. And if any of those are borne out to be valid, I think that'll shift the legislative tone into a more negative Fannie Mae of disposition. So I think this is a very important investigation that's going on right now, and I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that the nature and the whole character of the government-sponsored enterprises could rest on the outcome.
Could Fannie Mae become the definition of too big to fail?
Well, it is too big to fail. See, that's precisely the issue. As its size increases and increases, the probability of a government bailout, again, I want to emphasize, in the event of a financial mishap, not that anyone's predicting that, but it presents this risk, which makes it more and more likely that the government would come to its aid. So as Fannie Mae has grown, and it has grown inexorably, it makes this risk all the more serious, and that's why it's gotten into the legislative docket as we're going into the new legislative season.
Right.
And it is, you know, it's been sort of kicked around in the, you know, in the halls of wonk land for some time now, but it's really moving front and center now. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's going to be addressed in some way or another in the next legislative session.
Richard, you're sitting at the board table, the boardroom table of a lot of small businesses right now, and we're trying to put our budgets together for 2005. What's your advice? What are some things that you'd like to tell us?
Well, there's a couple of things. Number one, I think overall economic growth is going to remain solid. 4% GDP, I think, is totally attainable. That's above the long-term average, not by a mile, but by a sufficient margin that we should see labor markets tighten, and that's all for the good. Where we're going to see growth is going to be in a couple areas. In terms of the real estate markets, housing looks to be going down after four consecutive record years of home sales, but I think it should be an orderly adjustment downward. And on the upside, we've got the commercial construction industry, which is actually on the way up. Offices, retail establishments, even industrial properties are seeing new construction after a three-year dearth of activity. So construction activity is going to be mixed, consumer spending steady and solid. Business investment in things like capital goods and software looks to still be strong, as it has been over the past year, because this improving economy has created a lot of replacement demand and the like. And lastly, I just want to add that increasingly, for those who are selling into foreign markets, 2005 looks very good. Or for those who are competing domestically with imports, 2005 should be good, because the dollar on foreign exchange markets has weakened considerably. And this is one area where you can pretty reliably look at what's happened today and project what will happen in the next year. And we've seen the dollar fall, depending upon your currency of choice, somewhere between 10 and 15% since 2002. And this should mean a renewed competitiveness for many U.S. businesses.
Yeah, I think you're right. Richard, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always. And we will see you next time.
My pleasure, Jim. Take care.
See you. Richard DeKayser, ladies and gentlemen. He said the Fed will raise rates tomorrow. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.